Okay, yeah, thank you for the very nice introduction, and also, yeah, thanks so much for the introduction, invitation to this event. Like, I was completely intrigued by the first talk already. Thank you. And today I'm going to talk about one of my absolute favorite topics, which is how to make a quantum computer simulate a problem from particle physics, so lattice gauge series. And my group is at three different locations: University of Waterloo, Institute of Quantum Computing, and I'm also here at Perimeter Institute, and we are the quantum interaction theory group. And if you want to know more what we're doing, like everything that I don't have time to talk about today, you can go to quantuminteractions.com and you will find more details. And yeah, as I said, today I will talk about quantum simulations of particle physics specifically, and about the work that we did in 2022, so last year. And this is just one slide showing that to me, as someone who's really coming from quantum information science, it was really intriguing and interesting that about particle physics, even in 2022, there are always news, yeah, about, for instance, here, a new kind of pentaquark, or a first ever pair of tetraquarks, like really discoveries about new particles going on right now. And this is my gateway into a reminder for all of us, and also one of my favorite slides, about the importance of numerical simulations. Yeah? Because even so, we might very well know all the fundamental laws exactly, like for instance, as laid out by the standard model of particle physics, going to the answer to our actual physics question, like there is this blue arrow in between, right? Really the need to make these very complex simulations. And today I'm going to primarily talk about really problems from particle physics and lattice gauge series, but the methods that we develop in this context, and in part the methods that we develop out of desperation, like they really apply to a wide range of quantum problems. We are developing, like my group and I, I get a thumbs up, that's very good. So my group and I, we're in the business of developing new methods for quantum simulations. And here I'm going to talk about the application being problems for fundamental physics, for particle physics. But many of those methods that we are developing are also transferable. Like for instance here, we might have a problem in condensed matter physics, and we seek an answer in material science, yeah, to predict and design solids with certain properties. Or we have a question in quantum chemistry, which is relevant for drug design, and we want certain molecules to have certain properties. And in view of particle physics, what is motivating me for this particular field is really understanding the physics within the standard model of particle physics, like really understanding what nature will and will not do, yeah, but also, maybe even more importantly, understanding where the standard model of particle physics fails. Yeah? So that is really reaching the point at which our numerical simulations do not agree with the observations, because this is really the point where we can discover new laws and where we can start to develop new theories. So like, but in order to do that, like to really to see where it fails, the standard model of particle physics, we need very accurate simulations to see the cracks where then the light can come through. And of course, traditional lattice gauge theory is, as we all know, an incredibly successful field in its own, which has immense predictability, despite the quantumness of the problem, no? Because the problem is a true quantum problem, and despite that, like this path integral formalism, for instance, combined with Monte Carlo method, is like really giving us such a powerful tool to make simulations and predictions. And this is why we're focusing on problem classes which are inaccessible to the traditional lattice gauge theory. So, and I'm flashing them just here. So these are problem classes. If you want to address them with Markov chain Monte Carlo, they lead to sign problems. So yeah, topological term, for instance, or real-time evolutions, like literally anything that's dynamical. So as a quantum information person, I would, instead of real-time evolution, I would call it just time evolution. And of course, problems with chemical potential. So we just heard about the early universe. So that would be a case with extreme matter density, or in physics inside neutron stars, everything with high matter density and non-zero fermionic chemical potential. So these are the questions that we're particularly interested in, because we really want to hone in on the problems where classical computers cannot follow. And yeah, this is exactly why we want to have a quantum simulator, because as Feynman said, nature is quantum, goddammit. So if we want to simulate it, we better match the quantumness of our problem. So here's the quick timeline on quantum simulations of gauge theories specifically for particle physics. And the main take-home message really for this is it's a fairly new field. Now it's like, so if you look here, we had early theory proposals in 2005, and more theory proposals until 2011. And of course, now we are enjoying like really dedicated conferences just on quantum simulations of particle physics, but it's still, compared to other quantum simulations, a relatively new field. Here I'm highlighting just my group's personal pathway into the problem. So this is a paper from 2016. Where we were in a theory experimental collaboration, like a group of physicists in theory, like really collaborating with ion trappers. And so here we brought quantum electrodynamics to life on a trapped ion quantum computer. So really quantum electrodynamics as the simplest gauge theory, and this is from 2016. So you really see we had a very small lattice for our lattice gauge theory. Our lattice was only four lattice sites long, and we were simulating one-dimensional QED and the real-time dynamics of electron-positron pair creation. So that was our starting point here. And then fast forward to 2019, we switched gears. And we have a question already.
Yeah, quick question. That previous one, was that actually a physical experiment, or
yes,
was it a proposal for one?
Both, two in one. It was two in one. Like, we made a physical proposal, how one can really do gauge invariant physics of 1D QED in pair creation. And at the same time, our experimental friends also made the experiment on it. So this was like, we mapped 1D QED like really on the quantum computer, and the quantum computer was then really performing the experiment of pair creation. What happens on the platform is like spins, qubits flip, and you translate it to your physics question in the original
Thank you.
Model. Yeah. Right. And then fast forward to 2019. So we stuck with the exact same model, so quantum electrodynamics still. Still in one dimension for benchmarking, but now we greatly expanded our lattice size. So we went from a 4-spin lattice to a 20-spin lattice, and we also went from a purely quantum approach to a hybrid quantum classical approach. So I will be happy to talk about this more later, but like moving from doing the entire experiment quantum only to a hybrid approach, a variational quantum eigensolver in this case, where a quantum computer and a classical computer work in tandem, was really the magic ingredient which allowed us to go to this much larger lattice size. And so here we were again observing one-dimensional quantum electrodynamics, here a phase transition in the Schwinger model. I'm still here just warming up to the actual results that I want to tell you. So this was all abelian, right? So quantum electrodynamics, just an abelian model. And then after 2019, we really wanted to extend our capabilities and really to go to non-abelian matter, right? Like, I guess all of us here in this room are dreaming of going to non-abelian matter, because in order to describe nature as we know it, we really need it. Now, so nature as we know it in this picture is actually here from Canada, from Algonquin Park. It was a very nice canoe trip. And in order to describe a canoe, for instance, we definitely need a non-abelian theory. So this is just a reminder that the abelian, so to connect the non-abelian series really to the canoe, is because for the, so there are these two flavors of gauge series, right? The abelian ones, the non-abelian ones. And if I have an abelian gauge theory, I need, as we know, right, to make a physical state, to make a gauge singlet that nature does, like really makes, we always need as much matter as antimatter, right? And these composites, these physical states which have as much matter as antimatter, like electron, positron, is of course totally not what we see here now, because all of us are made of matter only. And in order to make these physical states which consist of matter only, like a baryon, for instance, we really need the non-abelian gauge series. Okay, so this is why we set out to make a quantum simulation which is really capable of simulating color degrees of freedom, to have the full non-abelian gauge theory in order to be able to simulate something like a baryon. And further down the road, then, of course, more complex objects. Fast forward again, so here we are in 2021 already, like on our personal roadmap to describing gauge theories in an experiment on a quantum computer better and better. And this is where we really set out to simulate this non-abelian gauge theory, and of course, one step at a time. No, so this is why we didn't go all the way to SU3 of the gauge theory of quantum chromodynamics directly, but we started out with, okay, how do we simulate gauge theories with colors like at all? So we did SU2 first, yeah, so with two colors. Okay, so here we were simulating SU2 still in 1D. On a superconducting quantum computer, like we switched a bit gears, like we did it with tripped ions before, but this is now on a superconducting quantum computer. It was done on the IBM platform. And we simulated SU2 quarks. I don't know whether you will allow me to call it a quark, if it's SU2. So SU2 non-abelian matter forming gauge invariant state. And we have another question. Oh, yeah, so on this axis we have, oh yeah, it's not showing, I see. So we have, so we were calculating the mass of our baryon versus a coupling parameter, But actually this is just a placeholder just to tell everyone that we did that, because we were moving to the actual SU3 gauge theory later. And that's what I actually wanted to show you. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but we still have a question on SU2, which is still in the warm-up. It's still the warm-up for getting in the right mood.
So, yeah, why do you go to hadrons right away? Why not simulate glue balls first?
Why not simulate what?
Glue balls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Like, we could absolutely have simulated glue balls first by going to a pure gauge theory. But my aim of the game was 100% to do non-abelian matter. Uh-huh. Yeah? Like, we really wanted to describe non-abelian matter for several reasons. And this is also why we honed in on the baryon. This is exactly what we wanted to see. If I have a pure gauge theory, then I'm exactly in the domain where Markov-Chain Monte Carlo and like the traditional methods work just great. Right? Mm-hmm. And if I really want to unlock the potential of quantum computers further down the road, mind you, yeah, like further down the road, if I really want to go where we absolutely need quantum computers in order to learn new physics, this being able to simulate the non-abelian matter was really the crucial milestone to be shown. Yeah?
I see.
Yeah, so like the glue balls were too easy in a sense. Like they were too easy in a double way, because A, clearly, classical computers do an amazing job of doing that. And secondly, what I was not showing you here is like I have an entire roadmap, right? And also on this roadmap for going there, the pure gauge theory is just too simple, right? So because for the simulation in itself, there was not the challenge. There was not the challenge.
Yeah, but don't you want to compare
that needed to be overcome.
Your quantum to classical simulations of blue balls?
Come again?
To compare, to kind of, as a starting point, to compare first.
Yeah, yeah, so for a starting point, yes.
And you did that, yeah? Did you? I mean, compare a blue ball spectrum, you know, that you get from classical lattice and the one you get from quantum.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not saying I don't like blue balls, no. It's just like you have to pick your battles, right? We just had to pick our battles, then we were setting our eyes on the prize, and then that's where we went. Also, like, of all the different things we did, like, I'm also showing you, like, a best of or my personal favorite. And that's definitely one of them. Okay, but I'm done with the warm-up now. So, like, now we are going to the actual results that I wanted to share. Actual results that I wanted to share is actually going to the third step of this ladder, yeah? Because you see in the beginning, in 2016, like 2016, no, long time ago, we were completely excited that we can do U1, yeah, that we can do QED. And so maybe for everyone who's interested in particle physics, you say, the one quantum electrodynamics, but teaching an actual quantum simulator to do it was not easy, no? So this is why I put this little bragging line in one of the slides, which said this was considered one of the top 10 breakthroughs in physics that year, because on the one side, like U1 is the simplest gauge theory that we know here, but on the other side, getting an actual quantum device to do it at the time was not easy, yeah? Okay. So you won. Then, okay, abelian, we know how to do it. Then the next step, okay, we learn how to incorporate color degrees of freedom. So we did SU2 next. And then our next step, right, next step of the plan, which I want to share today, is, okay, SU3. Why SU3? Because that's, this, of course, the gauge theory of quantum chromodynamics. And we did matter immediately, yeah, because that was the plan. Okay, so if you want to know all the details that I'm not going to share now, you can find it on the archive. Yeah, so it was submitted last year. It's called Real-Time Evolution of SU3 Hadrons on a Quantum Computer. And I also want to point out, so what is the take-home message from that? The take-home message was really to do the non-abelian matter, like the quarks, with really three colors, and to get the gauge group really right. And I made this little milestone symbol because we consider this a very important task on the way to make quantum simulators for gauge theories useful. And this was also accomplished in a way that this simulation really does gauge invariant states, like really physical states. And it's again theory and experiment, two in one. And we simulated tetraquarks and real-time evolutions. But it's 1D QCD, right? I mean, going to more dimension is another frontier that that we're currently looking at. So this is increasing the gauge group and increasing the dimensionality. It would be an entirely different talk, but we're also working on that. Okay, so we can dive right into it. But before, I want to mention that there's a partner group. So there's another group in the US, a group of Martin Savage, like they're working on very similar goals. And then they also have a paper out with 1+1 dimensional QCD. Okay, so this is just to reiterate the important points, really to make color neutral states. This is the first time that someone made color neutral states, the full gauge group of all three colors on a quantum simulator. And yeah. Let me show how to make these gauge singlets. But before I show you, let me also introduce the team to you. It was a fairly large team. As you can see here, so we have some very talented postdocs. We have a very, very motivated summer student last year, so Victor, who's also in the audience, and like who will also give a one-slide presentation. So Victor can give you also more details in person about this work. Then we were working also with an experimentalist, that was Sieglinde Pfändler from IBM, and her help was really invaluable of like really running this on quantum hardware. And of course, nothing would have been possible without the strong support from Randy Lewis from York University, who's our particle physics expert. So that's the team. So and now let me tell you how we actually did it. So one-dimensional space, discretized. Yeah. On the lattice vertices, we have our matter. On the lattice links, we have our gauge fields. Very traditional until here. And then we use a staggered discretization for our gauge fields. And in our encoding, on the odd sides are all the antiparticles, and on the even sides are all the particles. So moving forward, all these little candy balls, if they're filled, it means like matter. If they're striped, it means antimatter. And yeah, we just introduce our fermionic fields sitting on these vertices. And yeah, here's our elementary cell. So moving forward, I will really zoom in and concentrate on one elementary cell. So originally, that would be one point in space, like one big spinor. So where we have anti-red, anti-green, anti-blue, and red, green, blue. And we need to move, so we wanted to bring this to life on an IBM quantum machine. So the first order of business is to go from a fermionic description to a spin description. So we just do a standard Jordan-Wigner. And then the way how we do it, you would directly encode anti-red in a spin down, anti-green spin down, anti-blue spin down. And if one flips, then we can basically go back and forth between those shown particles in the vacuum state. This is actually the table for how we encode it, so how we can read out our quantum simulation later on. Yeah? So for instance, on the first side, if it's spin up, it's an anti-red particle. If it's spin down, it's a vacuum, and like so. So that's our elementary cell, how we can encode it. And yeah. We consider here open boundary conditions. So 1D and open boundary conditions is actually quite special, because then all of our gauge fields can be eliminated if you do a suitable gauge field transformation. And it's a way to get a very efficient description of your Hamiltonian, because you know these are very complex models. And therefore, my team and I, we are in a constant state of desperation, because we need to fit these very complicated models on our small and noisy hardware devices. And that's one way to really solve, save a lot of resources, because we eliminate the gauge fields, so they don't appear explicitly in the gauge field in the quantum simulation. Yeah? So you get a Hamiltonian description in terms of matter fields only. Right, so for the elementary cell, you would then have only the you would only represent the six matter particles, and the gauge fields are implicitly in the interactions. Two notes on this. So the first one is, even though the gauge fields do not appear explicitly in the interaction in the description anymore, you can still fully read them out. No, like we actually do that. Like we make plots of how do the gauge fields evolve in time. Like you fully get all the information. It's just by means of the Gauss law, you can use these constraints to eliminate it from your description. In a sense, when I have all possible states, the gauge invariant states are just a exponentially small set, and like we are not introducing the whole Hilbert space, we're only introducing the physically relevant space, and that's an exponentially small space, which is very resource efficient. Then also you might think, okay, this works in one dimension with open boundary conditions. Yes, but there are actually ways to extend this also to periodic boundary conditions, and there are also ways to extend that to two dimension and even three dimensions. And like we have beautiful results already, how you extend this to two dimensions and to three dimensions, and we know exactly what happens there, and we know about the resource cost. Yeah? So I can tell you all about it in the next coffee break or afterwards. For now, just the take-home message is it's like a trick to bring like a complex model to life on a small quantum computer. Yeah. And we are heavily relying on the work by from Erez Sohar and Ignacio Ziak for these transformations that allow you to eliminate those fields. Oh, and that's just what I said before, and which we use in many of our proposals. If you introduce matter and gauge fields all together, it's a gigantic Hilbert space, but the gauge invariant subspace, which is a physically relevant subspace, is very small, so we only simulate the blue blob here. So lattice QCD in one dimension. So we have three terms in our Hamiltonian, because it's 1D, so there's no magnetic field term. We have a kinetic energy term, we have a mass term, and we have an electric field term. If you do this elimination plus the Jordan-Wigner transformation, it gets a little bit complicated. So for your convenience, I listed it here. That's basically the term that the Hamiltonians that we want to simulate. And this is an artist's representation of a tetraquark because this is the object that we set out to simulate in our quantum computation. And to make it easier to wrap our brains around it, I'm going to introduce the tetraquark and the strong coupling limit. Of course, if we go away from the strong coupling limit, it will look more complicated, but it's very instructive to look at this first. By strong coupling limit, specifically here, I mean letting the mass, the bare mass, go to infinity and the x go to infinity in such a way that the diagonal terms of the Hamiltonian dominate, and we really have no pair creation terms in this limit. And in this case, we can write the tetraquark in the strong coupling limit in a very easy form. It's twice simplified for us to see how it works, like A, as I said, strong coupling limit, but also B, I'm doing it here for one elementary cell only, because if you have a longer cell, it would become completely delocalized, of course. Okay, so here's our tetraquark, and actually, if we are in the business of only looking at one elementary cell, we can also write easily down all states that are possible, both in the original description, but also in terms of spins. So like here's how you see it on the quantum computer, then how it will look like. But if we have only one elementary cell, there are just only four different states. There is the bare vacuum in the strong coupling. There's what we call a meson, like red anti-red plus blue anti-blue plus green anti-green. There's our beloved tetraquark, and there's also the fully filled state where the elementary cell is full, so it's a baryonium. And then what we can do, like we can look at the energy spectrum, and the energy spectrum in the strong coupling case is like super easy because basically things have just a mass and an electric field energy, a color electric field energy. However, if I deviate from the electric field, if I deviate from the strong coupling limit, the energy spectrum gets a bit more complicated. So for instance, the lowest energy state would be the vacuum with a bit of meson in it, then the next one in energy hierarchy would be the meson with a little bit of tetraquark, but also with a little bit of vacuum. And then the tetraquark, like the tetraquark state, really has also contributions with like really six particles or two particles. Yeah. So just later on, if I say tetraquark, but in a limit which is not the, in a parameter regime which is not the strong coupling limit, it's like really a wild mixture. And it gets wilder the more complicated our regime gets. So basically, what we did in our experiment, we observed the energy differences. So like here's a gap here, and in another experiment, we explored the second the first and second upper gap. So how did we do that? Basically, the experiment that we performed is a time evolution experiment, right? So we used the Trotter protocol in order to perform it. And the Trotter protocol involved up to 8 Trotter steps. And for this specific model, this involved up to 80 gates. So I'm writing up to 80 gates, but what I really mean is up to 80 CNOT gates. Yeah. So we are not counting the local gates because they don't contribute significantly to the error budget. And in order to do a time evolution of a tetraquark in full SE3, we had to play a lot of tricks in order to make the IBM quantum computer be able to simulate that. I'm going to talk about these tricks later on, but one of these tricks is like really a further reduction of the qubits needed. So this is a case where basically you reduce the number of qubits at the expense of making the Trotter sequence, gate sequence, very long, like 80 CNOTs in this case. And then, as I said, we ran it on the IBM quantum experience, and we also had to we really had to include error self-mitigation using random randomized compiling in order to be able to see the desired time evolution here. So here you see the results for the two cases that we just had on a slide earlier. So here's again the energy spectrum. It's two different parameter regimes. Yeah? So here you see the energy spectrum in the first parameter regime, here in the second parameter regime. This is just as a guide to the eye, so we know roughly what's happening. So this is not too far away from the strong coupling limit, meaning that our tetraquark is really mostly the strong coupling tetraquark. And if we initialize our state, we initialize our state in the strong coupling in the baryonium here. So here's time equals zero, or maybe I show it on the big screen. So here's time equals zero, right? Here's time equals zero, and we initialize the state in the upper one. So we initialized in a strong coupling baryonium, and then we switch on the Hamiltonian, which is not in the strong coupling limit. And that means that the baryonium, so the strong coupling baryonium, is not an eigenstate. So hence it will evolve in time. And then you see these oscillations. And in this case, the parameters are chosen such that in essence, what you're seeing is an oscillation which almost exclusively involves a baryonium, a strong coupling baryonium evolving into a strong coupling tetraquark, evolving into a strong coupling baryonium again. And then you can make a Bayesian analysis in order to extract the energy difference from this oscillation. And that's our cross-check, basically, how well we can extract the energy difference that we know, and that works very well. So we did this also for a more complicated time evolution. So we make the time evolution more complicated by just going to a different parameter regime, which is even further away from the strong coupling limits. And so here we have two frequencies dominating. And since I have only few minutes left, I'm jumping over some of the details here. Oops. Yes, I'm jumping over some of the details, but I will be very, very happy to answer questions on that. But rather than dwelling more on that, I will talk about the next steps. So the next steps that we are going to do is include more flavors. Yeah. So if you go to the publication, you will see that we already covered a pentaquark and that we did some first steps into including more flavors already. But even more importantly, going to higher dimension. Like going to higher dimension, in my eyes, is like really one of the absolute most important frontiers here. Like 1D, we really know how to cover the gauge groups and to go like really also to SU3. But in order to unlock the next level, yeah, so we really need to learn how to do periodic boundary conditions, how to go to 2D, how to go to 3D. And in terms of the challenges, like I'm talking from a quantum engineer perspective, yeah? So in terms of the challenges that you have in order to make this work on a quantum computer, there's a huge gap in going from 1D to more dimension. Yeah, it's like almost like a step function. But if you know how to do 2D, then you can also do 3D. I mean, conceptually, I mean, you need more resources, but like going from 1D to 2D, in my eyes, like it's really extremely important. Like also in terms of what you can do with it, like then, you know how we had only three terms in the Hamiltonian, if we're talking about the color electric field only, we absolutely want to see both sides of the coin. We want to see the magnetic field effects also. And for this, we need to go to 2D. And 3D, of course, eventually. And then, of course, like here, we were so happy that we have non-abelian matter with the correct gauge group. But of course, ultimately, we absolutely need to go to time evolution of physical dynamical processes. Yeah, because here I was showing you a benchmarking time evolution. Yeah, like we initialize in the bare strong coupling baryonium and then switch on a time evolution. Like nature, she does not do that. No? And there's a lot of work which needs to go in and which we need to do as a community in order to go from being able to do time evolution at all to doing really time evolutions that reflect the questions that we would ask a quantum simulator. Yeah? So time evolutions of dynamical physical processes. And so that, these are the immediate next steps here on this roadmap that I mentioned. And so I still have, I think, 2 minutes left for an outlook, because where are we going? And this is like circling back, in a sense. Yeah. So there are these vast problem classes. Like, this is not a small region. There are really vast problem classes in particle physics that are completely insurmountable to the traditional approaches, yeah, where we cannot even get started, where there is not even a trailhead. Yeah? And one example is, for instance, real-time evolutions, which, like I told you today, like how we are planning to tackle that. But another exciting frontier that I was not focusing on here is actually high matter density. Yeah, and I think this is a very inspirational graph here. It's also a graph that's part of the roadmap of my team. So because like here, this is temperature, of course, so phase diagram of QCD. So it's temperature on the y-axis, but we have the finite fermionic chemical potential on this axis. Yeah, and with the traditional methods, you need really high temperatures in order to calculate something. So the traditional methods are really confined to this like bluish region. Yeah, and we cannot help noticing how small this is. And also we cannot help noticing like there's so much physics going on. Like here, for instance, color superconductors, like we don't even know whether nature does this, yes or no, and there are all the experiments that are performed. And and there's so much physics to be explored with so much impact on different areas of physics like particle physics, nuclear physics, cosmology, astrophysics, even condensed matter physics, and quantum simulators for them, including a finite chemical potential, like really finite matter density for a quantum simulator, like these problems go away. Yeah, like when I saw this the first time, like years ago, I add a fermionic chemical potential. And it's just local terms. Like on a Hamiltonian description, this is just nothing. Yeah, and it sounds like a gigantic opportunity that we should really explore here. And then as my concluding slide about the vision where I would like to see everything going. For the classical infrastructure and the quantum infrastructure, one day in the future really to go hand in hand, yeah, where we basically have quantum coprocessors, which are part of a larger classical machinery where everything works in tandem to deliver the answers to the questions that we have to find new science. So similarly, like back in the times when basically GPUs were found and really accelerated discoveries, that now we have QPUs, yeah, which in future hopefully can accelerate and our simulations, and by being able to do better simulations, lead to new discoveries. Yeah, lots of unexplored territory ahead. So I think that's also why we're all here. And while we keep on discovering, I thank you all for your attention.
Okay, first question here.
Good, you can hear. Yeah, thank you. Interesting talk. I had two questions. One is, how do you know that the simulated states are genuinely non-abelian? Like, for example, how do you know that the baryon is really a baryon, or the baryon antibaryon is really that instead of three mesons? There would be, like, how do you know it isn't just a state of three mesons changing into two mesons, changing into three mesons? That's one question. The other is, as you said earlier, one of the features of non-abelian theory is you can have gauge singlets without antimatter. But it looks like you have matter and antimatter in your simulation, baryon, antibaryon. So are you able to get the baryon without any antibaryon?
Oh, yeah. I can project on the B equal one subsector.
Sorry?
So the baryon number is a good quantum number here. So I can really, okay, so this is a small system size, so everything conveniently is completely under my control. Yeah, so in particular, I can look in which baryon number subsector the state lives in, right? So the composite gauge invariant singlets in my abelian gauge theory would always live in the B equals zero subsector, right? I mean, I cannot even construct a color singlet. Should not call it color singlet. I cannot even construct a gauge singlet, which is not in the B equals zero subsector. Whereas here, I'm both in the B equal one subsector, like the baryon number is like really one, and it's color neutral.
Okay, so you can check that. What about I mean, you must have done it, but I'm like, how do I know that the BB bar is really a BB bar and not three mesons?
Oh, okay. So this turns into really an intriguing question for larger systems, but for smaller systems like we have here, so basically we are doing proof of concept, which is like the basic building block. So here I really know which state I have. Here I really can read it out directly. I know what I get. Like I have a configuration of spins, and I have my translation table, so I can really see what I get.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you, but I'll take your word for it, but it's curious to me how you can tell the two.
We also can and do make checks that it's like really a color singlet, so like we can evaluate that it's an eigenstate of the color charge operators simultaneously of all three, for instance, and we can evaluate that it lives in the correct B subsector.
Okay.
Yeah, you hinted a few times in the early part of your talk about a classical approximation does very well is that it's going to be simulations. And then in the final part of your talk, the eigenstate, you put the system in to start with the highest one, and I'd expect that to be more semi-classical. I see what you mean, you do that to get faster dynamics in the time. Did you try going for a more quantum state?
Oh, yeah. So, like, here the question was, like, we do a time evolution, but the initial state was a very easy state. Yeah?
Oh.
Ah, okay, like, both. Like, maybe let me answer the easy state thing first. So, for us, for practical reasons, it was just invaluable to have an easy-to-prepare state in the beginning, yeah, as a starting point. So that was really for practical reasons to start from an easy-to-prepare state. I have to say something more about this later on. But okay, so practical reasons, easy state in the beginning. And the second one, like, why did we pick like the high energy state? And that was also very pragmatic because we really wanted to see the tetraquark because that was the goal that we set for ourselves. And the tetraquark in the parameter regime just like really likes to mix with the baryon antibaryon because like it's just connected by a pair creation process. Yeah, and like if we aim to see the tetraquark and the process is driven by pair creation annihilation, so it just turns out like the baryonium is a good starting point because you have a resonance there.
Did you try a lower lying state, something more quantum?
Yes. So like this did not lead to publishable data. but like you can also, like another very obvious way is to do the lower state and basically have pair creation there. And then of course what we ultimately would like to do, okay, so this is beyond the capabilities what we can do today, but what I would ultimately like to do is, or have to do, actually, is to prepare not a simple state in the beginning, au contraire, to really prepare a ground state of the actual theory in the beginning, right? So, for instance, I'm in dreaming mode now, right? So I create the actual QCD vacuum, or maybe 1D QCD vacuum, yeah? Because that's really what nature does. And then I switch on, let's do QED. Like we prepare the vacuum there, and then we switch on a large background field, right? So like people do this even in experiment where they shoot high intensity laser beams, like in the ELI experiment, for instance, and these high intensity laser fields, it's a quench, like switching them on, and this rips real electron-positron pairs out of the vacuum. No, like this would be the true Schwinger mechanism. So like what I would like to do is like prepare the actual vacuum, which is a highly entangled state. Will be some effort for me to make that. I mean, we know how to do it with VQE, for instance. So we use this as initial state. Then we make a quench, but corresponding to a physical process like switching on these laser fields. And then we observe the antiparticle pair creation from there. So I think that's a very good idea.
Okay, so if I understood correctly, in 1D you don't have some dynamical gluons or dynamical gauge fields. if you want to go to 2D, do you plan to include them? And if yes, can you make a rough estimate of how many ions, qubits, whatever you would need for that?
Oh, yeah. So important. Yeah. So in 2D, I cannot eliminate all of them. But what I can do is I can eliminate a subset. I can eliminate a subset of them because, and it's a really easy counting argument. Like you, for instance, if you want to, like we have one paper out which is looking at a cube, for instance, like one periodic cube, and then you just count how many gauge fields you have. You just look how many links you have because every link is a gauge field, and then you look how many constraints you have, and the amount of constraints is like the number of gauge fields that you can get rid of. Yeah. So, for instance, if you want to have something easier on our brains, especially on mine, then we go to U1, for instance. And if I have a U1 open plaquette, like one plaquette with open boundary conditions, which would in principle have four gauge fields, but you can eliminate three, so you can describe one plaquette with one dynamical gauge field, which totally makes sense because there's a flux piercing it. Right, and that you have some left is like, from a simulation perspective, maybe more resources, but it's like, really, someone has to carry the physics, right? So it's like also exciting that you have that. Or if you have a periodic plaquette, so think of a periodic plaquette which has eight gauge fields in principle, but you can eliminate three of them with the gauge field transformation, then you have only five left. But suppose we are only, like we are modest, we only want ground state properties, okay? And then it turns out, as with three rotators, two strings, then you can get, you can describe an entire periodic plaquette with three gauge fields only, if you want to restrict yourself to ground state properties.
Yeah, and how many qubits would you need for these three remaining gauge fields?
Oh, how many qubits do I need for those? Oh, yeah. So that depends on the encoding that you want to choose. Yeah, it depends on the encoding that you want to choose. But yeah, so like if you're not bothered by having insanely complicated interactions, you could do it. It depends also on your cutoff, actually. Oh my God, you were touching on such an important topic also here, because these gauge fields, they live in infinite dimensional Hilbert spaces, no? And then basically we are not going to take qubits and simulate from minus infinity to zero to plus infinity, no? But as the minimal truncation that I can make is like for each remaining gauge fields, of which we had three, right? For each remaining gauge field, I need at least three states. Like, I mean, either no flux, plus flux, or minus flux. Like no flux, positive flux, or negative flux. Yeah, so like for each of the gauge fields, if you don't care to have insanely complicated interactions, you could simulate each of those gauge fields with two qubits. If you're happy with the minimal truncation, and if you're not bothered by the complicated interactions, but you will be. So, we have a lot of results on that, and I can talk about it maybe separately when Matt is not looking at me like this.